Hello, and welcome to Is Able, the radio show about possibility, where we look at what a person with disabilities can do rather than what they cannot do. Hello, this is Dr. Stephen W. Nurse, and this is our third series, and this is the series on Vietnam. And again, just to kind of orient you a little bit about this program, our purpose was not to get political, but our purpose was more to talk about the people that participated in the Vietnam War and just virtually every aspect of it. It was a war that affected more than the 58,000 who were killed there, and literally over 100,000, I think over 150,000, or I'm sure more, that were injured. And even now, people coming that are have been in the Vietnam War are having reoccurrences of issues with Agent Orange, cancers, and Parkinson's, and other issues. And today we're going to interview Phil Maharan. They say that everybody's connected within 6 degrees, and Phil lives on the island, lives on Vashon Island, and actually did my landscaping for my house about 1985. A long time ago. All the plants are dead now. Not my fault, his, but no, that's not true. That's not true. They're still all growing, and in spite of me. So Phil was, it says here you were when were you were drafted, or you were enlisted?
Well, I got my draft notice, and
That's a good time to enlist.
Yeah, right? That's exactly right. Being an infantryman was not my plan. In high school, I was a pretty good clarinet player, so I thought, well, I'll go for the band, the Army band. And I went to Fort Lewis and tried out. And the sergeant there said, well, you're going to have to go to the Army Navy School of Music, which was a 6-month course. And so after basic, I went there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now your clarinet wasn't like one of these 007 things where you
pull it
apart and it has a knife in it or something.
No, nothing like that. No,
it was not a weapon of mass destruction.
No, it was a genuine real life clarinet. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, so you did your basic training where?
I did my basic at, Port Ord, California.
Okay.
8 weeks there. Then I had a short leave and went to, Norfolk, Virginia, to the Army Navy School of Music there.
And you were engaged when you went into the Army, or?
No. As a matter of fact, Lynn and I were not. We were kind of just friends at that point.
Good.
Yeah. After I finished the Army-Navy School of Music, I had another short leave. And that's when Lynn and I started dating. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And remember, this is being recorded, so anything else you say on here, any of those other women we talked about earlier, no. Well, and so then you did your basic, and you...
Well, we called it AIT, which was the School of Music.
Okay.
That's individual training. And then I was shipped to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, to the 101st Airborne Division Band, right? Yeah.
Kentucky, the state of bourbon.
Well, yeah.
So, anyhow, from there, then did you go to Vietnam?
Yeah. I was at Fort Campbell until February of 67. That's when I got my orders for Vietnam. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I got to Vietnam in March of 67. At the REPL level, replacement depot, REPL level.
Uh-huh.
There was a big gate, kind of like a rancher's gate. Only uh-huh. it was made out of iron.
Uh-huh.
And across the top of it was the 101st or the 1st Infantry Division motto.
Uh-huh.
I did not like that motto. I did not like it at all.
What was the motto?
No mission too difficult, no sacrifice too great.
Uh-huh.
I was not thinking sacrifice was kind of in my bailiwick, you know what I mean?
Maybe if it said no mission too difficult, no saxophone too great.
That would have been better, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been better, but...
yeah.
So then you took your licorice stick, your clarinet off
to the... Kind of interesting because we went all over the three core area. We did pacification, which was the band, the medics, the dentists would all get together, go to a village. Our job as a band was to attract the villagers back into the village.
How many members in the band?
We had about, it varied, 45 to 55. It was a good size group.
Big size group, yeah.
That was a good group. Within that band, we had a stage band, which was a big band. You know, mm-hmm. Five saxophones, five trumpets, five trombones, a rhythm section, you know, that was.
Were there singers too? There was just, no, nope. Just band, just instrumental. Band. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And, we would break off from that from time to time, and go to other places.
So you went to these little hamlets, little.
Well, some of the villages were
did they
like.
Come to you?
Yeah, some of the villages were maybe 100 people. Some of them were maybe as big as 15,000.
Wow.
Yeah. So it all depended on where they were and what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
One village that we visited was... their thing was raising fruit. And for meat, they had pigs and dogs. And they fed the pigs and dogs the fruit. But they also sold the fruit. They ate the fruit, you know. And when you drove through that area, the smell was just absolutely wonderful.
Yes.
From all of you know, the oranges and pomegranates and everything that you can imagine would be in bloom. And just smelled so good.
Much better than the smell of the pigs and the dogs, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so you were kind of the Woodstock of Vietnam there with bringing the band in.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and then you said the dental people came in and the medical, and they at the same time and kind of did just kind of triage or help people with whatever they needed.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Oftentimes it would be after a nearby battle, and we would go in and after the GIs got fixed up all the way, the people in the village needed medical attention.
So they'd been injured then?
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah. And
so, you know, our job was to get them fixed up.
Did you do, like, vaccination? I mean, you know, I know that's kind of timely now, but Did you do that kind of stuff? Did they do that kind of stuff too? Or?
Huh. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. Okay. Yeah.
And then primarily when you were going around with your, did you have a clarinet over one shoulder and a gun over the other shoulder?
Yes. Or? Yeah.
So you were in full.
Yeah. We were in full battle gear. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes we would fly fixed wing to these places. The majority of our flights were in Chinook helicopters.
They're pretty, which are pretty good size. So they could
hold the whole band and all the equipment.
Yeah. Cause the Chinook has the back end that drops down. So.
Yeah, yeah. 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 We lost a French horn out of that one time. Yeah.
as long as you lost a French horn and not a French hornist.
No, just the horn.
That would be much better.
Yeah.
They're probably still using it for a water pump in Vietnam.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah. And so when you were out there in the doing this pacification in these towns, were you nervous or were you scared or were you?
You know, not really. Yeah. Things were usually over by the time we got there. There were a few exceptions, but it was usually over and done with. And we were there to make peace with the villagers as much as possible.
You think that worked pretty well?
Yeah. Yeah. The problem is, you know, we would go in, fix everybody up, leave. And lo and behold, but a lot of times, a lot of the people that we patched up were VC. You didn't know who was VC.
Right. That's crazy.
And so that they would be there, and they had a bullet in them or they had a hole in them or something. And we'd patch them up and send them on their way.
Did you help with the medical team and stuff too? Or?
No, we provided security.
Okay.
So we would play music put our horns down and pick up our arms. And we would provide security for the medical people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should have had one of those things like those one man bands, you know, with the guy beating on the drum and playing a clarinet, and you got a machine gun in the other hand, you know. And
it was something else.
Yeah. How about when you landed in Vietnam? What did you notice at first?
Boy, it was like walking into an oven.
You know, I laughed.
It hit me so hard. I was sick for 5 days.
You know, I'm not laughing because of that, but, you know, Rick and I have done quite a few of these interviews. Uh-huh. And I would say that virtually every person, and I think Rick would agree with me when I've asked them that question, somebody said you could chew the atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know, or that it was so hot that, you know, that it was just, you know, you felt like you were in a sauna is another one, you know.
I got the plane landed. I got up along with all the other guys. The plane was air conditioned.
Uh huh.
So you could walk along the middle of the plane, but when you got to the door and stepped out of the door, it was incredibly hot.
And humid too, probably.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 The Benoit Airport was blacktop. Mm-hmm. And you land in the middle of the day. Well, it didn't matter. The blacktop soaked up the heat and you step down and step on that blacktop and it burned you.
Mm-hmm.
It burned the bottom of your feet. I mean,
yeah.
Whoa.
I remember when I was younger, I worked up on top of Snoqualmie Pass up at Easton, and I worked in a logging landing, and it was a lot of blacktop up there too, and it'd be really, really hot, and you'd have to take, every time you took a drink of water, you'd have to take salt tablets because it was so, so hot that.
We oftentimes would, in the morning, standing in formation, you put it in your hand, your sergeant would drop two pills in the middle of your hand. One was an anti-malaria pill. The other one was a salt pill. Every morning.
And it seems like a lot of people also, the other gentleman that I'm interviewing today, he had malaria. He was in Japan, I think, for 3 months.
Oh, my
gosh. Know, with, you know, with malaria. Well, and so you did other things besides just doing the musical stuff. Tell me, relate the story you told me about the being on guard duty on the the tower. Isn't that Jimi Hendrix all along the watchtower?
Huh? Yeah.
And Purple Haze and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. We had to do our share of base security at Zion. And part of that was guard tower, part of it was a listening post. And part of it was ambush patrol. And so that one that I was telling you about earlier, I was on guard duty, guard tower, on a 100-foot tall tower. Yeah, it was. Are you okay?
Yep, we're good.
There we go. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it was like, I guess you could say it was like the radio towers.
Sure, sure. Yeah, like a, almost like a lookout in the hills.
Yeah, yeah.
100 feet up.
Yeah.
Is it hotter the higher you go? Or
it was cooler up there.
Probably was, yeah.
It was cooler, and it was nighttime. And, well, to make a long story longer, we were sitting up there one, it was a two-man duty. We were sitting up there, and we noticed down towards Benoit that the sky was getting kind of orange in the middle of the night. And it got oranger and redder and oranger, and it was kind of going yellow, orange, red, and all of that. And there were fireworks jumping up in the sky. We were about 10 miles as the crow flies from the Benoit ammo dump, and we watched it go up. It was amazing. It went on for hours, and our duty lasted 4 hours during the night, and when our 4 hours was up, it was still going.
Still lighting up.
Yeah, it was still going. VC had managed to sneak in and throw a satchel charge into the ammo dump and get the whole thing going. And I don't know if they got the guy or not. It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it just went up.
You mentioned, too, that you did some, you did go out on point sometimes.
Yeah.
And was that at night or during the day? Or?
Well, when we went on ambush patrol, we would take three squads, six teams that we selected out of the band. The rest of the guys that weren't selected shouldn't go. They were not good soldiers. So, anyway, I volunteered for point because my thought was the first guy through, if we got hit, they'd let the point man go through and then they'd hit everybody else. And thank goodness we never had that problem. But point for me was pretty good duty, because I could see everything that was in front of me, and if there was a little bomb or a something in the way, I could find it before it hit me. So I never had a problem.
Did you run into some? I mean, I know there were a lot of, booby traps and stuff.
Yeah. Run into them once in a while, but.
Could you see them sticking up? I mean, like a bouncing Betty has got little prongs.
No, there were a couple of things. There were toe poppers. A toe popper is a rifle shell inside a piece of bamboo.
Right. Oh, bamboo, yeah.
Yeah, with a nail driven up through a board so that the primer was on the point of the nail. And it was almost completely buried. If you stepped on it, you would step on the bullet, which would then force...
Shoot up you through the foot.
Yeah, shoot up your leg or shoot off your toe or whatever. Yeah. There was always a little bit of dirt around there that was messed with and that you could see.
So your eyes were peeled pretty much all the time.
Yeah. And as far as the booby traps were concerned, it seemed like there was always a string somewhere.
Yeah.
And that was easy to
Yeah,
to
one of my
up.
Other friends was on a dike and got the hooks in his boot connected, with a the fish line.
Uh-huh.
But he also was falling over at the same time. He tripped, and so the blast went over him.
Whew,
so he was very lucky.
Yeah.
Now you also talked about the listening post, and I've heard about that a little bit. Where they did they have like microphones or something out there that?
No.
Okay.
A listening post was three guys going out and away from everybody else, and your job was to take turns, just sit and listen all night long. And if you heard anything, you radio it in. We only had one instance where we had to call in, and lo and behold, the mortars went off, and what we thought we heard was Willie Petered, White Phosphorus. Yeah,
uh-huh.
Yeah, in that area.
What was the white phosphorus used for? Was it just to light things up, or
no? It was primarily anti-personnel.
Oh, was it? These were like claymores or something?
No, it was white phosphorus.
Just used for just. Were they throwing it? Was it like a grenade, or how did it get out?
No. Mortars.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 81 millimeter mortars. You could hear them pop in the base camp, and a minute later, that area would be on fire. When it went off, the white phosphorus would blast upwards and out, so that it would anything within 15 meters. Of that would be set on fire permanently,
because it burns really hot,
and you can't put it out.
You can't not with water or anything.
No.
And I heard that if it got on your skin, it just was.
All you can do is cover it up, keep it from getting to oxygen, and
right.
That would stop it. But It burned so hot, it burned right through you. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it was used quite a bit for base security. Yeah.
Did you use claymores too?
No. We had M16s, M60 machine guns, and we had single-shot 40-millimeter grenade launchers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you have all those kinds of things up in the tower too? Or?
No.
No, you were just...
As a matter of fact, when we're up in the tower, we had nothing except a starlight scope and a compass.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that was... You were a little vulnerable there. Up in the-
Well, you figure on tower guard, you're way up there. They're not going to shoot at you. And if they did, you know... we had the guys on the ground that were much better.
Yeah, that's for sure. And so when you you were there, what, a year and a month or 13?
A year and 2 months, yeah.
A year and 2 months.
Yeah. The duty was 1 year. When it came time to get my DROS, leave country. My orders were in Germany, but that didn't make it because I had a 45-day leave approved to get married. And even
you,
though
you did stay married more than 45 days, didn't you?
Yeah, we're still married, Steve.
Well, that's good, yeah. There are a few of us have been around that have been married.
Yeah. Anyway, I didn't want to go to Germany without my new wife. And somebody suggested that I talk to the sergeant major. So I made an appointment and went to see him. And that's why they call them sergeant majors. He knew everybody everywhere, how to fix it. He got on his phone. He called somebody. They chatted for a few minutes. He hung up and he said, okay, here's the deal. You extend in country for 45 days, and then you're too short to go to Germany. Cool. I extended for 45 days. When I was supposed to get my new orders 30 days before I left country. Got no orders. So I waited for a while. No orders. 10 days left in country, no orders. It's kind of getting panicky. So I went down to the administration company, told them who I was and what I wanted. And he looked me up and he said, you're in Germany. No, I'm here. that's what you get for a PFC, you know, working at the, yeah. So he said, where do you want to go? Fort Lewis was my answer.
Yeah?
Come back tomorrow. So I went back tomorrow. There were my orders, Fort Lewis, Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I got home, that was my duty.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Well, you know, I when you were talking about the listening post, I think, you know, as long as we've been married, between the two of us, our wives should have had one of those listening posts where they hooked us to it and we had to listen. That's one thing I tend not to do sometimes.
Excuse me.
So anyhow, yeah. that's great. And glad you got back. And
no holes,
you know, and I'm glad the marriage went more than 45 days.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Really am. So, thank you very much, Phil. I appreciate your coming in to do the interview and, take care, and we'll appreciate having you, and we will head out for the day. Thank you.
To stream this or any other episode of Is Abled with Dr. Stephen W. Nurse, go to voiceofashon.org and look under the Shows tab.